The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hold on. I've got to turn my thingy on. There it is. Ah! Well, two handsome fellas, you can't lose, can you?
You really can't. I think the Zoom system is probably going to break down from all that sexiness on screen right now.
Oh, is it going to break down from your side or mine? That's what you're asking.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll. And let's get going with the patented Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you. Hope everybody's okay. Hope you're doing good. Listen, I did my first nude painting this morning. Yeah, the neighbors weren't too happy, but my front door looks amazing. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
I had to think about that one for a minute, but actually I kind of like it. It's funny. Thanks to Duff for keeping us laughing, and thanks to Duff for keeping us rocking with Guns N' Roses. I was in Las Vegas last week to see GNR at the Allegiant Stadium. It was a great, great show. And Guns N' Roses are continuing on in the States till October. Then they're heading to Australia and New Zealand in November. See them while you can. And don't forget Fozzy as well. We are officially back on the road. We had the first show of the Save the World Tour last night in Columbus. It was a great opening night of the tour. Thanks to everyone who came and rocked with us. And we continue tonight in Joliet at the Forge. I will do VIP, then head back to Chicago, about 50 miles away, to do Rampage, then head back to the Fozzy gig that night. And then we got Belvedere on Saturday, the Apollo Theater. Sunday's AEW All Out at the Now Arena in Chicago. MJF versus Jericho. If I lose, I never wrestle in AEW again. I don't even want to think about that. And then we continue on. Harrisburg, Potomac, Baltimore. Don't forget also to Kansasville, Wisconsin, in that Chicago area on Monday the 6th. And so many other gigs. Flint, Cleveland, Johnson City, all sold out. Pittsburgh sold out. Look to Fozzy Rock for tickets, and new VIP spaces have just opened up. So if you wanted to go to VIP in your town and they were sold out, we opened up a few more places. So go to FozzyRock.com and come join us with Through Fire, Royal Bliss. They'll be out for us for most of the dates. And like I said, the Fozzy VIP experience is back. One of the best in the business. You get a mini set. You get a little question and answer with us. We'll sign something for you. So come hang out with Fozzy. You won't regret it. And you won't regret we're coming to Europe starting November 30th in Manchester, England. We're actually doing Liverpool at the Cavern on the 29th, the famous Cavern Club made famous by the Beatles. But then we're continuing on to Newcastle, Glasgow, Dublin, Belfast, etc., etc. Once again, FozzyRock.com. Come check us out if you are in America or if you're in England. And speaking of England, one of the greatest drummers from the greatest English band, heavy band of all time, Iron Maiden, Nico McBrain, is here today talking about the new album, Senjutsu, which dropped today. And you can get it wherever you buy or stream music. It's their 17th studio album. It's already talked about it being another classic. I really like it. It's a long album. It's a monster. But you got to listen to it over and over again. But it really is good. And the band is hoping to hit the road next year. Nico tells us about tour plans, a potential set list, some of the plans he has for his drum kit for the upcoming tour. He's got some great stories about how he got his nickname, his favorite, not-so-favorite train wreck stories on stage with Iron Maiden. He shares his memories and thoughts with the late, great Stones drummer Charlie Watts. Let's get our rock on with Nico McBrain and Iron Maiden Senjutsu right here on Talk is Jericho. I think last time we spoke, Nico, you had some chef pants on.
Yeah.
And now it looks like you have your bathrobe on.
I do. I it's morning here. Where are you, by the way? Are you in LA?
No, I'm actually in Milwaukee.
Oh, it's fine. We're on the same time zone.
Almost the same time zone, exactly.
Well, this is my attire, right, for going out what I do since the pandemic last year, when, you know, everything shut down, then the drive-thrus are open. So me and the missus started going to Starbucks for our coffee in the morning.
Yeah.
And we'd take our little sniffly puppy, our little dog, a little Shulky. And it's a ritual now. Every morning, if we don't take this dog out, she sits down on my chair here and starts growling at me, like, whoop, whoop. Are we going? So Wednesday morning's her birthday. She has a bath. So we go to Starbucks, drop her off at the salon. And me and the wife go in our robes. The girls' faces when we turn up at the Starbucks drive-thru, they're like, morning, Nick. Morning, Rebecca. Nice to see you nicely dressed for us, you know. But no, it's great. So, and I have my name on my robe, look. I don't know why. It's because if I hang it up, I can find it because it's got my name on. So,
well, let's just quickly jump in with this. You know, Nico. Where did Nico come from? I'm sure you've answered this before, but we've never discussed it. You have Nico. Everyone's talking about Nico. Where did this nickname come from?
Okay. It was back in 1973. I was playing with the first two guys I played with when I went professional, a guy called Billy Day and Mike Leslie. And I was working with these two guys. And the pianist, Billy Day, was an alcoholic. Anyway, we started working, writing songs. I was the only one with a driving license. Anyway, long story, even longer. We ended up doing what were called the Ghost Hours at CBS Studios in Whitfield Street in London. It was the first, we were one of the first bands to go in so they could, you know, make sure everything was working right. But at the same time, we were recording an album.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were in the pub next door called the Valiant Trooper. It was right next door to the studio. In fact, we actually talked to the owner of the bar of knocking a hole in the wall so we didn't have to go out the building into the pub. So it's crazy days. So we did this CBS convention in Streatham, South London. And that week we were in the pub. We were recording, which was at the daytime. So we'd gone in the pub to meet Dick Asher, who then was the president of CBS, and a guy called Obie Obenstein. And we were meeting them in the pub. So I'm playing a one-armed bandit in the pub. And these two guys walk in. One was Dick Asher, and Billy had been at the Source, and he used to get drunk very quickly. So he's come over, he's introduced the rest of the band to Dick and this other guy, I forget who it was who was with him. And then he comes over to me, he says, out the top of his head, he goes, I want to introduce you to our Italian Italian drummer. This, because I was called Nicky. My mum and dad gave me, I used to have a book called Nicholas the Bear. I used to carry it all around. Okay. So it came from Nicky. So they used to call me Nicky. And then he introduced me. This is our Italian drummer. Nico. You pronounce it Nico, okay. Like with E's. So Dick Asher shook his hand, said, nice to meet you. Then Obie turned up. And Obie at that time had these two Irish wolfhounds. I think they're Irish setters, red, big, real old, tall dogs. And he comes in the pub with these two dogs, right? But larger than life. And he, you know, and these dogs are sniffing around everywhere. And then Dick Asher comes over and introduced me to Obie, and he goes, I want to introduce you to Nico, the Italian drummer. And then I thought, I quite like that. So that's how I got my name.
The Italian drummer. Well, speaking of drummers, obviously it was a sad day yesterday when one of the greatest drummers of all time, of course, Charlie Watts passed away. And, I mean, I'm sure being a drummer of your generation, Charlie is a huge influence for any generation. But what are your thoughts on Charlie and his style?
Well, absolutely great, a great loss to the music, you know, family in general. But, you know, when you think about the life he's had, especially with the Rolling Stones, that 80 becomes like 200 years.
Right, right.
But, he was such a great influence on many of us younger players. And when I say younger, you know, of my generation, for sure. His style was unique because he was a jazz drummer. He came from like a big band background. And And he just slipped into the gig with the Stones, and obviously stayed, you know, sat on a drum stool and never left. But he had this lovely technique of he played both orthodox grip and match grip. He tended to change between the two, which was cool. But he did this thing on he like, instead of going like four, you know, the old two and four groove with a four on a hi hat, he'd go and he'd leave the fourth quarter note out. And that was this, it became like a, like Ringo used to have to swish on the hi hat and he'd dance.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then you take that, and it was, you know, there was a quote somebody told me. He said it was like, music isn't about the notes, it's about the space in between. And that was classic Charlie. He never overplayed anything. He sat on the pocket. Much like Ringo, you know, Ringo was a pocket player. So this is the generation in the early 60s you're talking about. And so as a player, total respect. And it was a sad day. I heard yesterday, like everybody else. And I knew there was a bit of news about the tour that he handed over the drum stool to Steve Jordan, who he recommended to take.
Right.
You know, they were great mates. And he said, Steve's an absolutely fantastic player, such a versatile player. And big old hi-hats. You know, that's probably why, because he has these big 15-inch hi-hats, I think, Steve. He used to. And, yeah, you know, so I don't know how the boys are going to go out and tour without him. Now knowing that he's not here, It's a sad loss, and our drumming community has lost a great ambassador. But, you know, I was very saddened by it.
Did you ever cross paths with the Stones or with Charlie at any festival? Or
yeah, the only time I ever met, I briefly said hello to him, was they did a secret gig at the 100 Club in Oxford Street, way back in the must have been. Well, early 80s, I don't think I was I with Maiden? Let me see. No, I it was before Maiden. It might have been like 80, 81. And they did this gig, and Billy Preston was on keyboards, and the 100 Club is probably about 400 people.
Yeah.
And I got to say hello to him as I made my way to the stage. Was in this club, the stage was about 2 foot, 18 inches high. So, and they're right there. And I took a Walkman in with me. So it must have been early 80s because, you know, when the Sony Walkman came out, you know.
Right.
I actually got caught recording them. Right. I'm kind of telling a story now. Of the, you know, so anyway, this big old bouncer came up and he's caught me. He's dragged me out the back of the, out the front of the, you know, where you go in to pay. And, he's taken my cassette machine. He's taken the cassette out, and he's gone up to Harvey Goldsmith, who promoted this particular private party. And this bloke's going, "Oi, look, I caught him bootlegging a freaking band." Right, and he stuck the tape underneath. And Harvey's gone, "You should know better, Nick." I said, "Harvey, you should know better. I'm a musician. Am I going to bootleg this? You have to be joking. Is this for me?"
Yeah.
You know, he said, "You can have this back at the end of the night." And then he gave me my machine back. And I thought, idiot, why didn't I have another cassette? But that was the only time I came in contact with Charlie. I'd met Mick in the Bahamas when we were recording Power Slave.
Mm. But,
yeah, you know, I know Ronnie. I've never met Keith. Only set for at that, you know, like
right.
In passing, you know, but I tipped me out off to Charlie, but I didn't really know him. I only knew him through his wonderful playing and the band.
One last thing about Charlie and the Stones. I saw them in about 2013, and it was right at the beginning of the set. They were doing It's Only Rock and Roll, and something happened where Mick came in wrong, and then Keith went off into space, and even Daryl Jones was off, and they were on the verge of a massive train wreck. And Charlie just kept drumming, you know, face never changed. And finally, they all just gathered around him and got back into the groove again.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever had to do that with Maiden? Has there ever been times when you almost get to a train wreck and you just got to keep playing?
Just pick a song out the hat, anyone. yeah. The, well, One story that springs to mind like that was when we were doing the Power Slave tour. We did 3 nights at Hammersmith Odeon, maybe more, actually. I think we might have done 5 nights there, or 3 or 5. And we were doing Flight of Icarus. Mm. And Bruce always, before we eat into it, you'd get a kick out. He'd go, "Scream for me, Hammersmith! Yeah! Scream for me, Hammersmith! Yeah! Scream!" 3 times. That he always did it 3 times. "The Flight of Icarus!" Wow! Right? This particular one of the nights, he goes, "Scream for me, Hammersmith! Yeah! Scream for me, Hammersmith!" And he didn't get to the third one, and I counted it in. I went, "Tch, tch, gang, on my own." So it was, "Tch, tch, do, 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 back, right? So Dave and H, because Dave H was stage left, Dave was stage right, and Harry. Bruce is out front giving it the big one, and he heard me start. So I couldn't stop. I thought, I can't stop. That would be really embarrassing. I'll just carry on. I said, how are we going to get out of this? So they all ended up coming flying up to the drum riser, and they're all standing on the steps in front of me going, "What the f***?" Gary's going, "What the f*** are you doing?" I went, "Watch me. 1, 2, 3, 4, whack! Bam, bam, right?" So that was one of those get out of jail moments, and we were recording, and Martin Birch is out on the in the Stones, funny enough, Stones Mobile, and they were out the back, and I played, got through the gig with total embarrassment. I felt like I went from this massive like, "Yeah, I'm playing really well tonight," to this, "Oh my God, what did he just do?" And so Chris, is no word of a lie, I thought, I'm not going to get fired. I'm going to leave the band.
Mm.
So I've gone out when we finished the gig. I've gone in the dressing room and I said to the guys, I said, "Look, I'm really sorry. You don't have to fire me. I'll just leave." Everyone started laughing. Martin Birch came in. He said, "That was priceless." And, you know, and so there is a tape of that somewhere. And, you know, I wish I'd have asked Martin about it. I did ask him about it years and years ago, and he said, it was a 1/4-inch tape that was running of the whole show, not just the 2-inch magnetic stuff that we had in, you know, because it was all analog in those days. And he said, "I've got that in my attic." And he said to me, "I'll get it out one day just to embarrass you." So so that was quite an experience.
Were you feeling like when you first joined Maiden, because you were the new guy in the band, was there a lot of pressure to where you felt like if you made this mistake that you just you're going to get fired instantly? Was it that high pressure for you?
Well, yeah, yes and no. You know, I mean, I think all musicians, whether you're playing professionally, doing it for a living, or, you know, doing it because you're doing it because of love for your instrument and love for the guys you play with. And so we never, you know, to say you don't make mistakes and people say, "Oh, I don't make mistakes," that's a load of BS, because we all do. And it's how you get out of them. That count, like the Stones when Charlie
sure.
Went and went, "Oh, lads, okay, just keep an eye on it. Here's one."
Yeah.
You know? even Dream Theater can make me, because where is one with those guys? You know, give your man genies like all over the shop. You're like, what's the count on that? But yeah, you do feel that you're not so much letting yourself down, but you're letting the audience down and your bandmates. Where if you make the mistake, you've got to own up to it. And one of the stories I usually tell people is when you do make a mistake, do it again deliberately, right? So the next time round the bar comes up, and you know, just do it and say, "Oh, I was just trying something out," you know? Because you know what? The drummer always gets blamed, no matter whether it's his fault or not. So,
right.
But in the early days, obviously I was under the pressure because I had to replace a very dear friend and an absolutely phenomenal drummer, Clive Burr.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not only am I, you know, big shoes to fill. So I had a lot of pressure on me to actually, you know, make sure I was in the doing what I was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was making mistakes. Everybody was making mistakes, you know. But it's how you get away with them, and how you not covering them up so much, but you know, sometimes you slip a wrong note in and you can't get away from that, you know.
Right.
Drum timing is very important. So sometimes you can do a drum fill, come out in the wrong spot. So you then have to catch the, get back into the one. So yeah, it's very important to make sure you, you know, especially in those days. And even more so today, because I'm not supposed to make the mistakes that I was making 40 years ago. Sorry, boys, but it does happen.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Well, it's a big time right now because a new Iron Maiden album is always such an event, shall we say. And there's not a lot of bands left where the album, it's like, oh my gosh, Iron Maiden new album coming out, and everyone wants to know all the details and song titles and song times and all this sort of thing. Are you happy so far with the buzz that Senjutsu has got? Because everybody's talking about it worldwide.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I've been online and looked at comments on Facebook and people and on our webpage, you know, Iron Maiden FC. And, you know, even now there's a lot of whinging going on. Oh, the sound of it. Kevin Shirley can't mix a, you know, he can't mix a spoon in a bowl and all this stuff, you know. And, you know, what makes me amazed about today's society and the way with the social media, wait till you get the f***ing record and the CD, play it at home, and then make your mind up. Everyone's whinging about it. You know, and here's the thing. The way we made records in the 80s and 90s was analog. And we're still an analog type band. We don't, you know, you've got digitized shit now. It's all numbers, zeros and ones and stuff and cleanliness. People have become conditioned to hear in a certain frequency in records that are made like that. We're still mixing from the heart. We still play the song. And even with the mistakes that we can see, little mistakes that are in there. You know, so, yeah, I'm a bit annoyed because, you know, I find that people are being too super analytic about two songs. Wait till you hear the record. Get a bit of vinyl. Get the CD in your machine and have a listen, you know. But the vibe of the, you know, even the Senjutsu Eddie, who is freaking phenomenally, I mean, he's frightening. He's not as frightening as the Book of Souls,
right?
Behind me, you know. Yeah, the vibe that, you know, because we haven't had an album out in 6 years, it's, you know, obviously taken a year and a half away for all this bollocking pandemic and shit, but the vibe is just great. And you know, the beautiful thing here is that, that all the songs on this album, Chris, it's like a... What don't you play live? You know, when I'll leave that out to your lovely listeners when they get a copy and they listen to it. There's not one track that you couldn't play live that wouldn't be like a stadium out track. Even the long stuff. I mean, three Steve Harris written solely, you know, and Steve doesn't mess around when it comes to the way he constructs his songs, you know, and you're always going to have an intro. And then, you know, people are moaning about it. Oh, what's the matter with you? Oh, writing on the wall, what's the deal with the country guitar at the beginning? Oh, please, give me a break, you know.
Well, I love that too. It's like the first Iron Maiden album in 6 years, and people are already, so the people that are complaining, because I've heard the album, and it's funny because, this is a quick segue, the lovely people at Iron Maiden sent me the record, but it's almost like Mission Impossible. You listen to it once or twice, and then it disappears.
Yeah,
I'm like, what? Like, I didn't know. I would have listened to it completely locked in, but I put it on the background. Oh, that's a great song. Let me have another listen. And then it disappears. So it's always the very kind of Candlestein Maiden way. But still, like, what a huge epic record. And the people that see these, you know, long songs are already, like, complaining that it's too long. It's been 6 years. It can't be too long. I'm okay with it being long.
Yeah. You know, and here's the thing. You know, people complain about that. You know, why is it always such a long? You know how it works, Chris.
Yeah.
You know, you've got your band. By the way, how are the boys doing?
Oh, very good. Thank you. Very good.
Have you played any gigs since? We
played a couple of gigs. We're actually getting ready to go out next week, to be honest with you. And everything's going good. We have a new song that just hit the top 15 on the charts. So actually, you guys are right behind us. So we're.
Oh, hang on a minute. I ain't right.
Yeah. Sorry.
I'll have to go and have a peek. Oh, but that's great. Yeah. I mean, I remember when we did our show in LA together.
Well, what a great night that was.
Yeah. And my biggest memory from that night, moving away, I know we'll go back to this in a minute.
Yeah.
Was. I remember on stage, out in the car park, the way they built that stadium, there was a massive big floodlight. And from my perspective, I don't know if it's because I was up on a riser, this light was, you know, sometimes when something peripherally takes you, you know, you just can't not look at it.
Right.
This light, and I kept sending Charlie, go and tell someone to shoot that light out. It got so annoying. And you know, you think, what a stupid boy, you're playing out there in front of 60,000 people, you know, and you're worried about a light in a car park. But yeah, getting back to recording, you know, a long song, so many times it's happened where we've finished the track and we go back and have a listen. And you go, you know, oh, that's great track. Yeah, well, we keep that second verse. That is brilliant. Nick, you f***ed up in the chorus, you know, all right, we'll take that from there. So you're listening but compiling at the same time. You're critiquing, and this is the way we worked on this album. Everyone was critiquing everybody else's playing and performance, which was unheard of before. You know, usually we'd just listen and go, oh, I like that. Oh, I made a mistake there. You know, Kevin, take a note and, you know, so to clean it up, or if we're going to use that track. But at the end of it, you go, oh, it didn't sound like that out there when we played it, but that's brilliant. You know, and we all kind of think, yeah, that's the one. And then Kevin are chiming, you know how long it is? How long is it? 12 and a half minutes. Nah, your clock's wrong. No, it ain't. Yeah, it must be, because that track certainly don't feel 12 and a half minutes. And you don't physically feel it as being a long track. Even Empire of the Clouds, now that did feel long.
Yeah.
But that was an epic. That was an opus. Now, of course, it's 18 minutes, half an album, you know.
Yeah, that's right, that's right, that's right.
But these tracks that Steve's written and, you know, in the past, but on this album particularly, didn't feel that long. And I think maybe, having listened to it myself, I'm totally different. I have a different objectivity when I'm listening to that album. I'm listening to everybody's playing and I'm enjoying it. I don't ever feel that track's too long or that section repeat. Parchment is my favorite track, and that's like 12 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of different repetition in it, but on the repetition of different counter melodies that keep coming in, and there's this one melody, then there's another. It's similar in a way to the Red and the Black, in as much that there's all these guitar refrains and melodies that go into across the groove that me and Steve have laid down, you know. I love that track. It doesn't seem that long. So I think the best thing, going for your original question about the vibe that's going on with the album, yes, there's a lot of great chatter going on. People don't like the Eddie, other people do. There was one person that I know as well, a couple of people on the forum were going, why have they got a black background like the Book of Souls had? Can't they come up with something better than a black background? I mean, come on, people. You know, you know, you could put a kaleidoscope behind Eddie, you know, all these different colours, like maybe, you know, Sergeant Pepper's, something that kind of vibe. And they'd still moan about it. Why didn't they put a black background?
I've found that about, you know, Iron Maiden fans, Star Wars fans, wrestling fans are like that. They're so involved and so interested that they tend to complain a lot as well.
That's
true. You know, and especially nowadays, because there's a forum for everybody to just go online and write whatever they want to write.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
So that's changed.
I don't want to paint a picture of me being moaning about our
fans. No.
I love our fans. We have the best And everyone in the world who plays professionally says their fans are the best. I know our fans are the best. I know that without a doubt, hands down. But I get kind of, I don't get angry. I kind of just go, God, I've got to scratch my head on that one, you know. And I like that because the freedom of choice, people have to have that, you know. And I love that. And I think our fans, some of them, I think, do it just because they want to get a reaction from the rest of the forum, yes, which is cool. And it starts up this, like, threads and stuff. And by the way, I do go on board. I don't actually answer anything or critique. You know, go in there and go, oh, you're off out of order, mate. Yeah. But yeah, it's great. So the general vibe, Chris, is just phenomenal. You know, and I've got, before we carry on, I want to tip my hat off to all our gang back in England, Mary, Dave Shacks, Ed. I've got all the people that have been behind, and Sarah. She's our web goddess. She does all the internet social media stuff. She came up with the Belshazzar's Feast idea. And I just want to let it be known that I, from the bottom of my heart, really appreciate everybody back at Iron Maiden HQ for what they've done and how they've, you know, pushed this. As I spoke to Dave Shack today, he said, I'm going after the 3rd of September, I'm going on holiday. I went, I think you're probably going to need it. You know. So, but hats off to everybody.
Last time I saw Dave Shack, we played World War One tank paintball after Download a few years ago that Smallwood organized.
Oh, so, right. Yes, I did hear about that. Yes. Yeah. All good, though.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Nico, how long has Senjutsu been in the can, so to speak?
Well, we recorded it in 2019.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's been a while. So, you know, there again, you know, I've got to say, it's been like a military operation of protecting the music. Steve, I think, was the only one who had actually on his hard drive had a copy of the album.
Hmm.
I don't think even Kevin had it. So once it was mixed and signed off, Steve was the only one. It was like Fort Knox, you know, because Steve is very, very super protective, as you can imagine. And I got a copy of it probably 3 months ago. And that was on a file that, you know, Steve said, look, I'll send you the artwork. He sent me the artwork first of all the different formats of the artwork, because I had to think about, you know, what I'm going to do in the future drum-wise. So that was the primary reason for sending me that early. And then, and I said, can I? He said, have you got a copy yet? I said, you know I haven't. What do you mean have I got a copy of it yet? Of course I haven't. He said, I'll send it to you now. And so it was, Bruce had a copy that he did with Steve when Steve was back over in England, or must be 7-8 months, whenever it was, because obviously the writing on the wall, they had to, but Bruce finagled a copy. Digital copy. And so I've lived with it for 3 months. No, we're just short of 3 months. So it was all kept under wraps. So when I saw the artwork for Eddie, I'm like, what the? Oh, you know, once you see, you haven't seen the album artwork, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Of course.
Oh, you did. So, you know, the one where he's with the boat.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, right. Yes.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Like the ancient samurai Eddie and all the different warrior poses that is inside the actual album is what you're talking about. Yeah,
it's just magic. You know, Mark, I think Mark did the artwork as well for us again. And it's just the whole thing to me. And not just as the drummer of the band, I mean, I'm also, you know, very critical on what to look for you know, the artwork in terms of what it represents, you know, and that the whole thing's just stunning.
How is that presented to the band? Is that something that Steve just says, here's what we're doing, or does he say, I got this idea and discuss it with you guys?
Yeah, really. You know, we talked about this over the years about delegating different things. So it's not all Steve. It's primarily Steve, Bruce and Rod. So Steve's attitude was, it's still a very democratic band, but he can't phone everybody up to make a decision. So
of
he
course.
Does make the decisions, and we get to know about it. And if we feel that perhaps it's not the right thing, or we have a different attitude, you know, to add something to it, then it's talked about. But 9 times out of 10, it's really left up to, you know, the three amigos and I. We you know, we're totally 100% confident in Steve, first of all,
Bruce, of course,
and then Rod and the management team. So, you know, like, for instance, when we decided we were on the Book of Souls tour talking about the legacy, we knew that we would, how we were doing it, and the Spitfire and all the different realms. Mm-hmm. And it was like, what song do you want to play? Everybody had a choice. Obviously, I came up and I went, we got to do Where Eagles Dare. If we're doing the war song, you know, all right. That was written down, and Davey, you know, had his choices. And so that's how that, the music side of it, we all tend to talk about how we're going to present the set list. But all that artwork and stuff is, I'm obviously the drum side of it. And that's my domain. That's my realm. Nobody interferes with that. That's all down up. But I do run it by Steve. Much to Rod's chagrin, he's like, whoa, bloody hell, Nicky. You're going to let me see what bloody stuff you're doing with the rule. No. I'm like, Rod, no disrespect, my love. I'm the drummer, and that drum set, that's my realm. No. By the way, I've run it by Steve. No. And then mums and grounding changes the subject for it. But, yeah, so really it's the three of them and the team.
How about when you recorded the songs? Because I heard this time from just listening to some things that Adrian has said and Steve has said, that did you guys basically write and record at the same time in the studio? Were guys coming in with ideas that you all work on? Or
yes, absolutely. This album, slightly different from the fact that we, especially with the longer songs, like Darkest Hour, Days of Future Past, quite short tracks, so we'd mm-hmm. learn them and in their entirety. So, but the longer songs, we would learn the piece, the bit, play it. We'd sit in a circle. Everybody gets their call sheets written out, and solos would be like, "Well, Jan, do you want to do the first solo?" This is a great thing about Maiden. No, there's no ego.
Yeah,
there's no ego whatsoever. So it's not like, well, I wrote the song, I'll do the first solo. Nothing to do. I mean, if you listen to Writing on the Wall, Davey does the first solo, right? And Adrian wrote the track with Bruce. So you'd think, oh, I'm going to do the first. I said, no, I can't play the second one, right? So, you know, there's none of that. So what happens is we'll sit down, learn the track, learn it. I'll sit there. Maybe play the... You know, there's no bass drum on a parquet floor, you know. But you get the idea. You
yeah.
put label. And so once we've done the, you know, we've got the sketch right, then we'll start doing the color by numbers. So then we'll go, are we ready? Let's play it. Put the headphones on. Off we go. And then we'd learn that once that piece of music has been written, if we feel comfortable, we'll go, right, Kevin, can we record? And he's got it set up where he presses a certain button on the desk or whatever he did, and then we're in record mode. So then we record it. So we did a lot of the songs in sections.
Gotcha.
On this album. And so that was slightly different for us, but it worked. It was a phenomenal, but we would be in the studio. This was a thing, you know, people go, God, it must have cost you a fortune. Yes, it probably did, but, you know, it was worth it, because rather than go to a studio with your equipment there, a rehearsal room, and then you write the whole things and you know, scratch it all together and you do your color by numbers, get it all right, we could do that in the studio. So I think we booked that studio for 2.5 months, 3 months. And the other good thing that we did with it was we got this from the Matter of Life and Death album, when Kevin would pre-mix while we were playing the songs. So I kind of get a premix done. So a lot of the groundwork was done, whereby in the older days, we would record. I'd get the drums right, then Steve would go and change his bass strings and redo the bass. That didn't happen. That hasn't happened for a long time on these albums. We've actually recorded together, and nothing was redone. Like a lot of the rhythm guitar parts were all recorded as we played them. Solos, when we got to certain solo sections, they would probably be redone unless they were that good that they didn't need to be done. So it was a great experience, this one.
Because there's some intricate playing on there. There's the middle section for Death of the Celts.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, once again, a classic Iron Maiden history lesson, which is amazing. But the middle part of that, I said to a friend of mine, this is the best kind of instrumental middle section since Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, the song. It just cooks, and there is part after part after part. Is that something that you did in pieces? Because that is a very intricate, you mentioned Dream Theater earlier. Yeah. I was like, this sounds like Dream Theater. This is very intricate here.
You know what? My total recall of how those tracks were put together, that one probably was done in parts because it is so intricate. But I can't say verbatim off the top of my head, yeah, we did that bit there, that bit there. You know, most of the time it happens with segues or going into, you know, a different time feel, the whole section would be learned.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it might be then cut and paste onto the previous section or whatever, you know. So yeah, that was probably done in bits. Most of the songs had bits done like that, except for, as I said, the more, you know, Writing on the Wall. I think we did the solo section, if I'm not mistaken, on that. Stratego was pretty much that same. The solo section in that was probably an ad, but because that you know, that, be honest with you, that's the hardest track for me to play off that album.
Stratego.
Yeah.
Really? Why is that?
But it's like triplet on the bass drum, and it's about 130 beats a minute around that sort of tempo. So it's right on the edge. I remember when Steve came up with it, he said. I kind of hear that triplet feel like we do, you know, the gallop.
The gallop, like, yeah.
Okay. And I remember when I first tried I was having a bit of difficulty with it. And I said, you're going to have to let me live with this for a bit. Let me practice that, you know, getting that nice and clean.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did. They gave me some time on my own with it. But yeah, I think Death of the Celts was done in bits, you know.
It's interesting because you mentioned the Iron Maiden Gallop, and that is, you know, the centerpiece of the band, a trademark of the band. And that basically started with you. This is your drum pattern that you do quite often.
Yeah.
So you created the Maiden Gallops.
Well, he's done it again. Oh, has he got anything else in his drawer? Yeah, I've got dirty laundry in the drawer. So, you know, just so you know. Yeah, but, you know, this is the thing. You know, you play, it's like what Charlie, when we talked about how Charlie lives, what's in between the notes. You play what's needed for the song. And mm-hmm. if it happens to be something that's got a feel similar to something else, then be that as it may. I'm not going to change something just because it's like something I played before, or Eagles there, you know, whatever, you know, but that locks my rhythm is to drive the rhythm section. And that's me and Steve primarily, bass and drums, backbone of the band, without a doubt.
Of course.
And whatever Steve's playing, it dictates how I will interpret the rhythm. And that's what that track needed. Much to my chagrin, I've kind of, as I said to Adrian, it's all your fault. He said, no, he said, you've made that bed. Now you've got to lay in it. That's on you. So I'm like, okay, I got you. I get where you're coming from. But, you know, it's what the song needs. It's not because, that's the Maiden Gallop. I'll stick it where I can. No, that's what it required.
It was perfect for that.
I'd like to have just played a kick on, you know, 1 and 3, you know. That'll be fun. The disco version.
As we start to wind down, just to talk about a couple more of the songs, there are some songs on here, and Bruce has alluded to it, that are different from typical Maiden songs, which is great. You guys have always changed things up. But you're talking about Writing on the Wall is one, and then the title track Senjutsu, which is completely different from what I was expecting, but it's very much a drum-based, heavy rhythm type song.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is that the way it was presented to you, or did you just say, hey, let me try something more of a tribal beat here?
Yeah, it was presented to be like Kodo drums, that kind of big, you know, like imagine there's these, the, you know, the Japanese Kodo players,
yeah,
you know, being that. And it was like, You know, and Steve said, hey, what, you know, I can hear like big, you know, like a tom, more toms rather than a straight groove. I mean, in the chorus of it, you know, it goes into the snare, and but it still keeps the basic jungle theme, or if you like, it's not so much the Kodo, because I'm using too many different sounds across the kit. So it was something that we worked on together. We all kind of put, you know, Bruce was like, oh, you know, that sounds really good, more on the, not going to the too high toms, going more around the lower part of the kit. So yeah, I'd say that 60% of that was my input into how that part was created. On that Senjutsu track, that's fucking that. I've got to say, for an album opener, that is some spectacular track. That really is, you know.
Like I said, different from what you would normally expect, and then that's why it works so well.
And the other thing that it's not a mate at playing thing so much, is that Hell on Earth, the last track, it fades out. And I know it's funny because we haven't done an actual track where you fade out the music and then that's it. You know, there'll be maybe a fade musically and then the intro would be the outro.
Yeah.
But we actually, you know, it's one of those, all right, hands on the fade, right, everybody. Obviously, with automation now, you just press a button and everything goes down as it.
Yeah, that's right.
Not like the old days where you all had to bring everything down together, so you all got ready. But no, that's too quick. You know, you got rid of the snare drum too. You know, just a point. I said to Bruce, "Do you realise that our album ends with a fade out?" I said, "No, I can't remember the last track that we had, especially on a finishing album, the finishing track." That's just as a matter of interest, boys and girls.
That's a good point. So you mentioned a couple more things about your drum set, and what do you have planned? Because every Nico McBrain drum set, every tour is something spectacular. Absolutely. As well, because we can't see you. We can never see you. All we see is the drums, so it's got to be something.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, the last two, the Booger Souls tour and the Legacy, I actually took my angle of my tom-toms, flattened them out a bit, and I took my drum stool up about an inch and a quarter. Right now, that, okay. Be honest with you, Chris, I don't know, I suppose it's like when, you know, comparison for you in your wrestling days would be putting a pair of pants on with a big crutch, what are your cod piece in it, you know, like, oh, yeah. I don't know, I'm just trying to make a comparison of how different it would feel, you know. But so I felt, right, first of all, that I was on, like on a mountain, just by going up an inch and a quarter, and flatten the drum. So that made me my posture to play the tom-toms, I had to sit up and get my back straight. Over, I mean, it's a little too late.
Too little, too late?
Yeah, a little too soon, too, whatever that is. But, you know, at least I need, because my lower back, it was pretty messed up. And so by taking my drum set up, my drum toms flatter and going up high, you can actually see me. Whereas before, you just see the top of my head and my forehead. And then now I'm actually up level. So girls, just so you know, make sure you can have a look at me. But no, obviously the Legacy Tour, we're going back out with that next year. There will be obviously some plan. I take it we'll be planning on doing something later for Senjutsu. I do have some incredible ideas for how I will present my drum set if and when we do decide to go out. But, you know, because everything's such a question mark, you know, because of what's going on in the world, the Legacy Tour is scheduled to go out in June. I am looking at a new kit for that section of the Legacy Tour. But, yeah, I mean, this is one of the great things that that Steve has always said to me. He said, look, Nick, here's the artist rendition of the what we're going to go out on the stage set. Once that's been decided, that's how our stage set will look. I then take my ideas and put them onto a drum set, and I get carte blanche with that. I'll always run it, as I said earlier, I'll run it by Steve and say, look, this is, do you like the gold? Do you like the gold hardware, the black hardware, or the regular silver? And he goes, I like them all. You choose. So I do that because he's this is Steve's band. This is his creation. This is his dream. Five other guys are living it with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I want, I will, I mean, not to, no disrespect to Rod. I love Rod like a brother, and, you know, but, you know, certain things that I've done on my drums, him and Bruce have laughed at. And yet my boss has gone, well done on that drum set, you know. So, yes, I've got some good ideas, but, yeah, so it's great because that's my tapestry. Get it?
Mm.
Tapestry? Never mind.
Boom, boom.
Yeah, I don't have a kit here.
And when's the last time you actually saw the all six of the guys? Have you been together at all in the last few years?
No, absolutely not. I haven't seen any of them. I mean, we've spoken on the phone.
Yeah.
But, you know, the last time was our last show, which was, I think, August of 2019, somewhere around there, August or September, on the last part of the Legacy Tour. And, you know, then we hung the old gear in the warehouse ready to go out in 2020.
Yeah. Do you miss playing live?
Absolutely, yeah. I got a couple of guys. Okay, so the restaurant, we do our party every year at Rock and Roll Ribs. We're having a party on the 4th. Hopefully, if everything's okay in the state of Florida, because at the moment we're ramped up as number one for COVID deaths and people getting sick.
Right.
If we don't have to shut down, we're having a party, and I've got a tribute band called Titanium Tart. Boys and girls, don't try and nick the name because it's already been registered, okay? And it's an Iron Maiden tribute band. But instead of having Eddie, instead I've got Tatiana, who's, you know, because unfortunately, right, my idea from years ago, Chris, and I'm leading forward because I need to let you know only you. I come up with this, Eddie needs a girlfriend, and we'll call her Edwina. And guess what? The Iron Maidens have used it.
Oh.
Which has really pissed me off. Anyway, that's not it. So anyway, we're doing a night. Right. I've got a gig I'm doing. I've got a rehearsal tonight, funny enough. First time I'd have actually been in a room playing with other people since 2 years. So,
wow.
We're doing a gig in a club down here called Piper's Club on the 15th of October. And I think it's 15th, and I'm going to do my Bad Company tribute band called Dodgy Enterprise. So we've been. That's a good one, isn't it?
They're both good. I'm still laughing over Titanium Tart.
Titanium Tart, brilliant.
That took me a couple minutes to get that one.
I can't take credit for that. I have to tip my hat off to the wife, my wife Rebecca. She said, "I know. Why don't you call your band Titanium Tart?" And I went, "Titanium Tart. You having that? Oh, that's pretty good, you know." So, we're going to cover our Seventh Son era.
Mm.
So, and, you know, I'm going to do a bunch of songs off of that, you know.
That's great.
Yeah, so, no, I haven't played, haven't seen the band. Spoke to Bruce last week because he got COVID. It was a good thing. Advocate right there, because Bruce had his vaccinations. And he got sick, and he said, "I just felt like I had heavy flu." Which, if you have been vaccinated, I believe is how you feel when you get sick.
Right.
If you haven't had the injections, could be a lot worse. Well, it is a lot worse.
Right.
It's not could be.
Right.
It is. It's going to be. You know. So I honestly, boys and girls, you lot out there, I would thoroughly, totally recommend. Don't matter how old you are. Don't matter how young you are. Get vaccinated, because then we can open up the world and go out and do what we do, you know.
Play some rock and roll. Last question for you, Nick. What song or songs are you looking forward to playing live from Senjutsu? And what's your favorite song you like playing live currently?
Oh, that's an easy question. The Lot. I honestly think, you know, maybe we should leave out Stratego.
Right.
Well, that's not going to work. That's not going to happen.
That's the single. You screwed yourself on that.
All of the tracks, I think. But, you know, as I said earlier, Chris, my favorite track's Parchment. It's just got such a great feel to it. And I love the counter guitar melodies that build up to towards the very end section where we go into the double time. And we maidenize that bit. But, all of those songs, I think, would be stunning live. I really do hope that if we do go out, which it seems strange not to, but it, you know, we haven't actually confirmed anything to do that yet, but would be nice to do the whole album. But I would love to play that record, the whole, that, whether it would be played in the same, you know, the running of the tracks on the album, I don't know. I think we did that with Matter and Life and Death.
You did, you know, yeah.
We played it as it was on the album. So probably would be, but we'll see. As to my favorite track ever to play live is Hallowed Be Thy Name.
Oh, yeah.
That is just a track that, I mean, to be honest with you, all of Maiden's tracks to play live are just great. They all have their own certain fingerprint and feel. But Hallowed, when we get to play that, I mean, just the whole intro, you know, it's the bells, and although I used to play the tubular bells on the intro, but Michael Kenny does it now because he roars, you know, can get the right sound every night. I went, okay, it saves me, you know, turning around trying to play the bell of a cymbal plus the tubular, which is what I used to do. And it saves my drum tech from having Roy come out and put them up. Right. You know, I used to have three holes in the drum riser, you know, to accommodate the halfway of
the tubular bell.
But,
yeah.
Hallowed, it's just, and the thing is that it never ceases to get my psyche going when we go into the solo section. It lifts, the whole song lifts up. I mean, we've got it to a tempo now where it isn't too fast. It's still faster than the album's very ploddy.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes that would get carried away. We'd play it too quick. Cool. Bruce couldn't sing it. He'd come off stage, he'd go, oh, blimey, shit, I've got to get full strength now. I can't get the words out. What's the matter with you? And you know, it's got this three guitar sets, you know, and it's just, you know, and then when it comes out, bah, da, da, into the chorus line at the end, it's just, and then the very end of it, it's something that possessed me, that track. In the old days, Davey would end up, you know, and then Dave would go into this, right, and I'd stand up. In the old days, I'd stand up on the floor, tom-tom. Literally, it would take my weight. Mind you, I was probably 30 pounds lighter in days. And I'd be giving it all this to Davey with the sticks and, you know, pointing at him and, you know, doing a whammy bar with the drumsticks, which we still do, but I can't stand on the floor, Tom. I have to stand on the stool and put a foot on it because, you know, the drums aren't as strong as they used to be, the way they're made. Lighter shells, thinner, you know, you could crack them.
Right.
And I was, I'll just tell you this story. There was one time we were in New Zealand, and we had a 93, I think. It was a Fear of the Dark tour. And Sonor was supposed to send me a signature drum set, the Lion signature. They're like 12-ply Bubinga shells. They were like half inch, 3/4 inch thick. Well, the bloke sent me a Force 3000 drum set, and it was a 22-inch bass drum, 16-inch floor, 10, 12, 13 tom-tom, right? And my drum tech, Walter Gamina, phoned me up and he goes, you ain't going to believe this. Hey, man, they sent you the wrong drum set. I went, what they sent me? They got off. Anyway, so we played it. We got to the end of the set, right? We did Hallowed in the set. I stood up on the floor top, right, like I used to with my normal drum set, right? Davey's going, I'm giving it the big one. I got on the floor, Tom, the leg broke. It twisted and bent the leg. The tom's gone that way. I've fallen back on the drum stool, right? Whacked me head on something, one of the cymbal stands, right? I've got up. Davey's still going, right, I haven't finished the song. I picked the floor tom up and thrown it up in a lighting truss, right? It's ping-ponged in the lighting. This is no word of a lie. It's ping-ponging a lighting truss. Bruce, in the meantime, has come back towards the drum set going, come on, we're going to finish the fucking song. I've kicked the drum set over. The snare drum's over here now because when I fell, it had fallen next to the hi-hat. So now that the floor tom decided to fall out of the lighting truss, just barely missing Bruce, who then threw the tom back at me. This kit is trashed. It's the cult, and we still got like Number of the Beast or Iron Maiden of it. So I managed to get the hi hat and give it a on a snare drum that's like this. Of my life. So hence I don't stand on the floor tom anymore.
Nico, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, man. Hopefully we'll get a chance to see you down the road somewhere. I got to come to Rock and Roll Ribs one of these days. It's just down the road from where I live.
Yeah, sure, mate. You're more than welcome. Just let me know when you want to come up and I'll meet you.
You can give me a 10% discount
or
something?
I'll give you more than that. I'll give you 15.
Thank you, sir. Great job on the new record. Thanks, Nick. Thank you, man.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Be safe.
God bless you. Take care. See you soon.